Well, do we, to kick these off, do you want to go around and do some intros and stuff? What I was thinking was who we are and why we're on a Telegram Mark Claire Show chat, like how you ended up there. I'm very curious. I don't know who wants to go first. I feel like Bill is the most official looking person with his mic.
I'm official in my Sasquatch Hawaiian shirt.
Yeah. Oh, there we go. Sasquatch Hawaiian shirt. All right.
Okay, I'll start. That's cool. I first found Mark Claire when I was playing with libertarianism and the Lions of Liberty. Of the three guys, I like to listen to Mark and Brian, and John's good, but at the time it was so depressing listening to his people.
Who's in jail?
Yes, it was terrible. But as time wore on, I kind of got tired of the Big L libertarians, which is kind of like right here for you if you really want to get down with it. And I don't know how it happened, but Mark and I kind of woke up at the same time, and he got tired of doing his show and he started his new one. And I was following him on his other podcast, the comic book one. And when he announced this one, I decided, hell, I'll give him a couple of bucks. It's just a coffee. So I think I was the seventh supporter that he had for this new show. I've followed Mark for a long time, I guess, at this point. Oh, wow. Like, I don't know, maybe 7 years or something like that. So that's how I found myself there. And then the Telegram group well, of course, I have to join that.
Yeah, exactly.
And now I know you weirdos. So there you go.
There you go. Well, I guess I can go, but because you said 7 years, like, oh, that's a long time. Then I was like, wait a minute. I think it's for me, it's 2016. So it was around 7 years ago.
Yeah, right about that. At least. So
to full disclosure, I was, I grew up conservative, Republican household. 2016, I was like, boy, this is not that I dislike Trump. It was kind of hilarious. But I was just like, wait a minute here. Is this really what politics is about? Like, these two candidates are ridiculous. And so, kind of just drifted away from Republican Party, which kind of got in the Libertarian Party. Justin Amash, I was kind of following him a little bit. Then he did this interview on Mark Claire's show. And that was like one of the first podcasts actually I ever listened to, was that interview. But didn't really listen to the podcast. So I just kind of kept listening to them, and they kind of grew. And then, kind of like you, I followed him over to this show. And then somehow I ended up in this Telegram group. So I don't know. That's my story on how I ended up through Justin Amash in an odd way, I guess. So, and now I'm just apolitical and figure out whatever. How about you, hobo mom?
Yeah. So I started getting into Mark actually. It was actually pretty late. So I have been a libertarian for a long time. I've called myself a libertarian, actually being in California for as long as I have been in California. I used to always say that I was just an anarchist, and I didn't actually know the time that that was a thing, that there's like, ANCAPs and stuff. I had no idea. I was just like, I don't really believe in government, and libertarian is like a loaded term. So I would always just tell people I'm an anarchist, and people are like, oh yeah, I can relate to that, And then they're all, it was just, but realistically I was a libertarian and my dad was a libertarian. And then, somehow I just started listening. Like, I wasn't even much of a listener to podcasts. And then, I started listening to like all the libertarian podcasts, like Dave Smith and Mark Claire and Lions of Liberty and all that stuff. And then as COVID kind of just ramped up and got insane, I ended up stopping all of that. I was like, I can't follow this stuff anymore. It was just that kind of abandonment. And then when Mark Claire went off and did his own thing, I was like, yep, that's way more up my alley. I can follow. And now it's like one of the only podcasts I listen to now. Well, did before he took a break with undetermined amount of time.
What the heck, Mark?
Yeah,
this will drive him right back to it. Don't worry about it.
Exactly.
Sure, this will inspire him.
He's like, I gotta fix this.
How about you, Luca?
So I was basically raised to be libertarian by my dad. he introduced me to a bunch of economic stuff during like 2015, 2016. And so my intro was the Trump phenomenon, and meme culture and all that. And I did the whole like 6 months libertarian, then an anarchist pretty much immediately. So I got to reading Ethics of Liberty and all that type of thing, like within a year or so. And then, so my libertarian phase was back then for like a year or two. And then in college, I started out by tactically choosing to identify as just an anarchist, because then it's ambiguous and people don't detect you as an enemy. But then I ended up drifting farther and farther. I got into neo-reaction, reading Moldbug and stuff like that, and then also Stirner, and have been all over the place. But I listened to Mark Claire a bunch of times during that phase, in which is, for me, it's like senior year and freshman year of college. And I always remembered him being one of my favorites during my hiatus of like being totally tuned out, because I got sick of libertarians back in early Trump years for a while. And then during COVID, I got further disillusioned with everyone but Jeffrey Tucker, because he actually did something with the Barrington Declaration. And then when I was graduating college, my friend and I, we had bonded over libertarianism during my freshman year, we decided to tune back into libertarian culture. And that was the post-libertarian moment was happening. And so I like locked in and I started following, because everyone was discovering all this stuff that had led me away back during the fizzling out of Trump happening. And so it was really fascinating watching everyone like gradually discover all of the hard right stuff that kind of is a further level of deprogramming in a way. And so then I started listening to Mark Claire a lot more. And then at some point noticed that this chat existed. Now it's become my favorite chat, basically, other than my version of this type of a thing that I've created with my friends. Those are basically the two things that I use the most.
That is quite, this is the most libertarian I've ever spoken to in a single moment. So I don't have a...
You live in San Francisco.
So. I do, yeah. I do live in San Francisco. So I'm this is like... sometimes it's safer, but I think COVID destroyed libertarians in the eyes of the city. So it's like, nah. I never went as a... what's the word I'm looking for? And not education, but like academic, as you did, Luca. I don't think I'm the normie of the group, as I have said in the chat. So
yeah, you don't have to tell us; it's pretty obvious.
What are you talking about here? I gotta, you know. Oh, that, you know what? This was not intentional, by the way. I just realized that.
Oh, that's amazing. I did
not. Does it have the fake island off of Australia? Let's see it.
Fun fact. So I used to live in a small condo building where everyone Chinese or Russian. We were the only native English speakers there. And so this older couple knew that I had kids. And they're like, oh, we'll give you this globe. And it's definitely, I don't know if you can see it, but it definitely has a Soviet Socialist Republic on here. It had, yeah, there, you know, it's all backwards, I guess. It had Yugoslavia, you know, so yeah, Yugoslavia is still on here. There's a fake island off the coast of Australia. Are we talking about New Zealand? Is that a joke I don't get in your world?
It was a thing I saw from, oh, geez, what's the name of the movie? All right.
Dazed
and Confused. And at the beginning, the one kid, they're spinning this globe, and someone pointed out that there was an island off to the west of Australia that shouldn't be there. And that, I was like, what? So that just happened like 2 days ago. So I didn't get a chance to bring that up in the Telegram group. Sorry. Too busy looking at the moon.
I love that you have the globe Earth behind you and Hobo Bomb.
Yeah, I know. I like in the battle of the...
What?
To flat earth.
Yeah. Well, before we segue to potentially that conversation, I already joked with Hobo Mom that if I can call you that, it's kind of funny saying that out loud. But I said, as I'm sure Mark is a true libertarian, if we do product placement for his Fox and Sons coffee, you'll have to put this up now. So with a promo code MCF, guys. So anyway. No, yeah.
Oh, good job. Way to kiss up. Good job.
Yeah. Well, hey, well, you know, that way, like I said, he has to play it now. So he's like, oh. So we do joke a lot about the Earth and the Moon. I can't get a read on how serious this group is because I'm just that far off. So, but Barb, your map definitely tells me how serious you are about it.
Yeah, I'm really bad at lying.
Tell me about it.
Yeah, I'm really bad at lying. So you may have noticed that from a Telegram group when I say something and then I'm like, actually, no. Yeah, I actually do believe that the Earth is flat. That's not a joke.
So, yeah. And Bill, where are you at? I can't get a read on you either.
I'm in Washington.
Figuratively, Bill. Figuratively, where are you at?
Oh, I'm in between there. I don't think it's exactly flat, but I don't think it's exactly round either. Well,
that's fair. There are mountains and valleys and like all kinds of like, you know,
it's I don't Nebraska,
think it's flat in that sense. You know, I just don't think it's like a floating space testicle.
Hobo Mom's just like, there's no mountains. There's no mountains.
Space testicle?
I don't know. Ball joke. That's all.
Yeah. We'll keep it trying there.
I met someone recently and we came to the consensus of flat earth shape agnostic.
That's yeah, I think you're probably just like one step away maybe from,
I described it. I'm like a third between three different models.
Oh, okay. One,
like conventional thing for the most part, but minus the scientific materialist bullshit. And then two is the hollow earth. Because Agartha always sounded way cooler to me than flat earth firmament, and then it was boring. And then third option is the idea, which I guess this is the flat earth with a firmament, but the like we're in a realm in between two layers of water. And so it's like kind of a bubble in between, like in a membrane between two layers of water. That's like so cool to me. So I really like that model because it's cool. I don't really, Bird from Timeline Earth was talking about this on an episode he did where he reviewed like six or seven different Earth shapes, including Donut Earth. It does not affect me one way or another. So I can't get myself to care too much to stake a claim on anything because it doesn't affect me at all.
It's like the perfect Mark Claire show, like point of view. It's like politics, like whatever, like shape of the Earth.
Yeah.
Doesn't change my job.
I was thinking about this when I was listening back to some of the Aliens ones. Oh. He was talking about, I think it was Van Daniken, and how he set the format for how the Ancient Alien stuff always ends up by like guiding you in a certain direction and then asking a question and leaving it open. So that they're not taking they're not making a claim, but they're leaving it open to you. Oh. And it occurred to me that I feel like Mark does that a little bit.
Could it be aliens? Like, I'm saying it is.
That's kind of what I'm doing. I don't care. I can't bring myself to care. But another thing I really respect as a like from a scientific point of view, the flat Earth position. Because I haven't done the tests. And I think it's really cool that people are devoted enough to it to actually do the science. Because everyone just takes it for granted and trusts the science.
Exactly. Phrase. So the one, I probably have a lot of questions, Barb, but one is, and this might be kind of pretty basic, but can you explain air travel to me under the flat earth, or explain to me what the flat earth is? I listened to one podcast on Mark Claire's show. That's why pretty much my exposure to this concept.
What about air travel?
Like how do you, like if I fly like to Dubai, like the, or Magellan, like quest around the world, or maybe that didn't happen, but you know, like how do those work in a spherical world? That makes sense to me. You go around, but if it's just a circle, like if you go from here to like, how do you fly around the world without hitting an end?
Right. So the Earth is round, and so you can circumnavigate a flat circle, right? Like that. So you don't actually have to be flying around a ball. In fact, it makes more sense if it's flat, because the way that the atmosphere above us would have to be rotating at increasing speeds as the Earth rotates. So as the plane goes up, you're actually going to find more resistance or less resistance depending on what direction you're going. But airplanes don't have that much drastic change in their flight distances. So it doesn't really change anything. You can get anywhere on a flat surface. You don't have to go around the globe. And in some ways it makes more sense also, because if you're flying around a globe, the airplane has to go along with the globe. So they're kind of always would be pointing down to maintain the shape of the Earth. But there are like gyroscopes in airplanes that keep them level at a level plane. And it doesn't change depending on where they are on the other side of the Earth, even though it's supposed to remain stationary to its basically creation point. So it doesn't actually really make sense for it to be flying on a globe. That makes less sense.
So are other people hijack in here, but so are pilots in it on it then in this theory of not theory. I don't want to sound to me, I don't know, whatever, but like, so are pilots, because when you sit on a plane, right, they grab like the map and they're like, oh, like it's actually easier to go over in, you know, the Arctic to get over to Europe, right, instead of like cutting across because of the way the Earth globe. So like, are people just like your own pilot then on it too, or do they don't realize it?
So no, because so much of this is ingrained in people's brains that they don't think that it's unusual that you would be flying flat, not around a ball. It's so some are aware, I'm sure. And some are not aware at all. But when you're in flight school teaches you to assume a level plane. Their manuals say, assume a level plane. So fly like you're flying across flat ground. Don't take into account any curvature, and it's going to go just fine.
And I guess it's the argument that most of the time. Oh yeah. Most of the time.
Yeah. It's going to go most of the time. Exactly.
Most of the time.
Most of the time. In fact, if you try to take into account any sort of curvature, that is going to cause problems.
And what about constellations then too? Like I guess if you're flat, wouldn't all the constellations be the same? Or I guess not exactly, because you're here, so the constellations right above you, and over here, this concept. So I guess it's the same concept as a globe.
If you have the Earth, it's round above it.
Flat. The when you look at the maps for the stars, it's flatter, like style. Anyway, so that definitely makes sense. Like it would just be moving around the way that the map does when you're looking to check little cardboard things.
Right. So the celestial bodies rotate above the Earth. And again, this is one of those situations where actually flat Earth model makes more sense, where the North Pole is the center of the Earth. It is the center of the ground. And the North Star is in the sky above that. And everything rotates around it. And you can actually see that you could even do one. You go out and you point a camera to the North Star and everything literally rotates around it. But if we're whirling through space, you know, lobbing around a sun, rotating and shooting through space, that North Star staying exactly where it is, they say, oh, well, it's so far away. So far away that's why we never see movement in it. But there has never been movement. There are ancient areas that and documents that rely on the North Star for sailing, all kinds of stuff. It has never actually changed. It's always been the same star. And, you know, they'll say, oh, well, this North Star is going to change again, that it changes.
I was just going to say, I thought, doesn't it change every like 30,000 years or something?
They will say that, but there's no proof of that. There's no actual proof that it does. And when they kind of, again, change their narrative very regularly when somebody says, well, that doesn't really make sense. But there's no movement in the North Star. There's no, you don't see the North Star wandering. You can go out, you can see the constellations in the same location.
But those wander, right? The constellations, like
they do, they rotate around, but they don't really wander. So you can see the same constellations that people saw 30,000 years ago in the same areas of the sky reliably on the same time of year. So they're not
where's your proof?
Not like wandering off and away. They're all within our vision. So like all the stars are still in the sky. And they're not super off course, even though we're supposed to be like shooting through space.
What was the story of your coming around to this point of view? I'm curious.
Oh, that's a good point. Yeah.
I didn't want to be a flat earther, you know. I wasn't raised this way, you know. I feel like I was raised in a cult. It was the cult of the globe Earth. And then I think realistically it like came up once and I was like, that's super interesting. There are some things that are like, I need to look into that. Is that true? That's how it started. It was like, you hear something and you're like, is that even true? And then you start looking into it and it's like, the explanations, the layers of explanations on both sides, it was like it's really the most logical thing. And so I just kept getting deeper and deeper and I just, there's no going back for me at this point. That doesn't make sense for it to be a ball. I mean, rivers, let me see if I can find it here. There is. So we all grew up knowing that water is flat, like it finds a level surface. Mm-hmm. And so the ocean should be a level surface, but they say, oh no, well, the way that it's all whirling around the ocean is not a level surface. Well, that doesn't, one, you can see it. You can actually go out and see. There's the edges of water aren't starting to curve down. Let's say it's so immensely big, you can't actually detect any set curvature. But as you go up in an airplane and you look down, you're not seeing curvature. You don't go up in an airplane and the horizon stays with you. It doesn't go below you. So if you're like flying above a globe, you're going to start to see that curvature. You're going to go above it and you're going to start to see that ball below you. But the horizon actually lifts with you. It doesn't disappear or start going down. And let me see if I can find this example. Oh yeah. Okay. So yeah. Okay. Water flows to a lower potential or to a lower level with respect to sea level. So we know all rivers flow down into sea level. Water at rest forms let me actually, sorry, find this other thing. I have this book and
I have
an appendix in it. So it's really frustrating. But let me see if I can find it. Cause I wrote my notes and they're not so good. Give me a moment.
You did notes.
Yeah. I was gonna say,
no,
my one go-to on all is like, because I remember in high school, which was farther back than it was for Luca, but maybe not as far back as for, wildcard Bill over here, but
hey, calm down. ageist.
We're libertarian. It's fine. Oh wait, no, we're not. I don't remember now.
Oh yeah, ageist thing.
Yeah. If you really want to derail, I remember because there was this myth that like the early explorers were afraid that the world was flat. You just fall off. I don't know. You know, right? We probably have heard that, and then like Magellan proved that wrong, right? But I had associate teachers like, well, if you ever look at like the sculptures of Atlas, the like, Greek god, like he's holding a big ball on his shoulders, right? And so, and those, I think, date back a long time ago. I guess when did, maybe this is, I don't want to derail your water thing or point, but like, when did the Earth become flat? Or when did the globe kind of enter in? And like, when did that, like, sorry, let's squash the flat Earth kind of concept. Or did people know, did ancient people know? But what's the history of that?
Wasn't that Pythagoras?
Pythagoras,
yeah, what the
right angle?
I think Pythagoras was the guy who deduced the size of the Earth by measuring like the shadow between some statue and then walking to Alexandria.
Right. And then, or was it Archimedes? There might have been another one there. I don't know. Yeah, I would say about ancient Greek as well. When I'd say that they came up with the round Earth,
gotcha,
theory.
Yeah. Yes. So it's not, for most of history, people have believed that the Earth is actually flat. And for a significant portion of that, when they came up with the ball Earth theory, it was not like a conclusive thing. It was like, oh, this suddenly makes so much sense. We all believe. It was kind of, it wasn't just adopted immediately.
Those guys are crazy thoughts.
Yeah. But so here's like a little bit from Eric Dubé's book here. This is like a really quick one. It's like 200 proofs or whatever of that the Earth is not round. So rivers run down to sea level, finding the easiest course. North, south, east, and west are all intermediary directions over the Earth at the same time. If Earth were truly a spinning ball, then many of these rivers would be impossibly flowing uphill. For example, the Mississippi, in its 3,000 miles, would have to ascend 11 miles before reaching the Gulf of Mexico. Because it's such a long river, for it to, the height of the highest point, if you account for the curvature of the Earth, means that it would actually have to go up before it started going down again. And the logic, that doesn't make a whole lot of sense. Another really good example would be the Amazon River. The highest point of the Amazon, the Amazon River is 85 meters above sea level. But it extends, let me look this up really quick. I had it up.
I'm curious what Bill's question is.
Oh, I just, the flying over the North Pole makes sense to me if the Earth is flat. But what about when you flip it over to the South Pole? So there's no South Pole?
There's no South Pole.
No South Pole.
There's no South Pole.
So I just, when you like going from the end of Argentina and flying around, that's the furthest place you can fly from to get to, you know what I'm saying?
So, that's right.
If you take it and flatten it all the way out, then Argentina's clear over here. And to get anywhere, that's as far as you can fly to the north. Does that make sense? What I'm saying?
Right. I'm sure if I totally understand, but maybe I can kind of explain a little bit. So if the Earth is round, but not spherical, you can get to every point on it, but the south is not, north is a single point in the center.
Yeah.
The south is everywhere around the outside. And it actually logically makes more sense that way. One, there's a compass, for example. A compass always points north. It always points north. And I don't know if you've ever played with a compass with a magnet, but when you have a magnet next to a compass, you can override the north and you can move it around. But if you put it perpendicular like this, then the compass starts going wonky. It doesn't know where to go because it can't get to north. North is no longer along it in a way that it can get if you put it like behind it. So if north is one single point on a globe, as you go down the globe with a compass, it should be confused. It's no longer perpendicular. Like it's not in the right orientation to detect North anymore.
Is it? I don't know if I
really follow that. And it should be pointing you downward.
Yeah. And as you get
so in Argentina, the
supposed South Pole, it's going to try and point up. It's like that would be the closest way, not around the Earth back to North. If it even could, you know, it North, the quickest way to North would be straight up if the Earth were a globe.
So the compass should point you down through the ground.
And compasses just don't work that way. But people have been navigating the world with compasses for an immense amount of history successfully.
So I guess, and that the, I don't know if we can share screens here. Can we? Oh.
Yeah, there should
give
be.
Give it a shot. What the?
Host disabled participants. Wow.
Oh, wow.
So, because I'm just looking, I think about your Argentina thing. And so if you, I've got a world map, which, so if Argentina is here, like how long would it take to fly to South Africa? Because I'm just, can you allow us to, Ms. Host, to share?
Yeah.
Because I do think.
There you go. Try that. See if that works.
Beautiful. They don't navigate Polaris in the southern hemisphere either, which is
that's true. Yeah, because I mean I did a stint in Australia, and you have like
everything concepts. About this map though is not the way the flat Earth orientation is at all.
All right, fine.
Chad, flat you got a round
flat Earth map. All right, I'll probably just. Oh boy, I probably shouldn't do this on my work laptop. No, here we go.
I would love this. Thumbs up for that suggestion, flat Earth pizza.
So we've got, so Argentina is way over here, right? I just keep picking on them. So to fly, like, oh, just visually, this looks super far away to like, versus if it was a globe, they would just like getting to Australia is, I mean, they would just go over the South Pole, right?
So it wouldn't be, right.
Yeah, but you can't fly over the South Pole, not just because there is no South Pole, but they won't let you fly over the South Pole. There's the Antarctic Treaty. They will not let you go past any part of Antarctica. There's like one part of Antarctica which they allow people to go to. And even then, it's like a research base. It's extremely limited there. You know, you can go and take like a cruise liner and go see and be like, yeah, that's the pole right there. But they don't let you go anywhere beyond into Antarctica at all. There's a treaty that literally they will stop you if you try and fly in. They will stop you if you try and sail around it. And they'll either send you right home or arrest you. There's like a ton of nations that all have come together to guard it. So we have no clue what's beyond it. We just are trusting that they're telling us what's beyond it is true.
Do you have any guesses?
I don't know. I think a whole lot of ice, probably. I bet it's cold because the sun doesn't go that far.
So that's
one of the big Atlantis deals is that it's buried in the Antarctic, which is always fun to play with.
Yeah, like who knows? Maybe there's something else way over on the other side and resources, you know, and that they're trying to keep from us. It's impossible to know.
That's where Mark Claire's at right now.
True. He's pretty sus. I think. Interesting. I'm
thinking about it, like maybe the Norse myths are just literally true and like they're giants down there.
I do believe in giants. Yeah. I kind of believe they've obviously been hiding giant.
Oh, that's definitely true. I mean like that's separately definitely true. I mean like the Jotunheim in Norse myths with the ice giants, specifically that form of giant. Like maybe that's just what's on the other side of the ice wall. And
could those ice giants be Nephilim? I mean, has anyone ever done that? Chad.
That's where they would banish it. I'm not saying I disagree with the Nephilim and giants thing. I just am very skeptical still on this But I did on the Earth thing. But I did. I do think you will appreciate this, especially Bill, because now I know Mark and some of his people he's had on have talked about the Indian lunar landing and how like that video of like that 3D simulation of everyone's like cheering it on. But from what I was reading, everyone knew that was a simulation because obviously you don't have a camera on the lander, but there was just like the indication visually of when it landed. So people weren't cheering because they believed that was the landing. So, you know, what they want you to think, right? So, but if you go on the India's website of, you know, their NASA, boy, I get flashbacks to like late 90s, early 2000s. And I was like, this is their website. And I went to the gallery and because presumably if you look up like American articles, like there's a picture that the India satellite that orbiting the moon right now took of the Apollo landing site. And I haven't gone through all of these photos, but it's not prevalent in any of these photos of like, hey, here we took a picture of the US landing site, which just struck me as odd because I would think that maybe that's the American egocentric view of myself. But I just think like, oh, wouldn't that be kind of something you'd put on your gallery? So I put this out there saying I'm not, you know, totally Mr. Normie over here, but I just, question the moon landing, whether it's actually a spherical moon, I believe there is, but I do also think that their website is a little janky. So anyway, I'll stop taking over here. So.
So I thought you posted a picture of them landing of the site.
What was that?
I thought you posted a picture of the Apollo 12 landing site.
I did on the Telegram chat, but that was from Quora. Like I couldn't find. So I wanted to be like, all right, here's like from an American website, right? Like, hey, look. But I couldn't find it on. I was like, well, what did their website say? And I couldn't find it on there. Not that I did exhaustive research, but like if you look up like under, you know, American media websites, like, yeah, see, look, India took a picture of our landing site. But if you go over to India's site, like, they don't mention that anywhere. Like, I don't know.
It seems, okay.
Right. Yeah. Sorry. That's the point I'm trying to make. I'm just like, it's just weird that I don't know. I feel like there should be more pictures of like the lunar lander up there on the moon. It's a
one thing. That
you would think. So, just like, so I am, well, I'm not 100% in that boat. I'm definitely, I enjoy being very skeptical of the moon landing. How about that?
Yeah. I feel like if you think that the moon landing is possible, then that'd be a good place to start when looking into something like Flat Earth, because you're probably not going to get to Flat Earth if you still think moon landings happened.
Well, that is true. So fair enough. Fair point. I could see it conceivably in the realm of possibility possible, but did we actually, how many years ago was that now? 60 years ago?
No, man, 55.
Yeah. All right.
Was the year after I was born.
I was like, Bill, please tell me you don't remember the moon landing.
I do not.
It's just really bizarre. Like just the narrative. Like we went there and then we just stopped going there.
I heard there's some trippy things about like the astronauts talking about getting water in their boots or something like that. What do you think about that? Space is water, like rather than space is fake, space is water.
Well, my theory on something like that would be that a huge amount of the footage is actually being taken underwater. They actually go underwater to take the footage because that's where it appears that you could be, you know, no gravity. So a lot of that footage is just happening underwater. And you can even find a lot of footage where they say that they're on the like International Space Station and there's like little bubbles coming up from like behind people, like someone like just, you know, took a breath and they got their oxygen mask on. So there's even some evidence to suggest that that's not completely far-fetched. now. I don't know how much footage they've taken of moon landings and water necessarily, but it makes you wonder. Be a good environment for it. You can kind of swim and float through.
Yeah. What do you, I guess presumably Agartha and Hollow Earth is incompatible with Flat Earth, but what, why should I go with Flat Earth when Hollow Earth sounds more fun?
It does sound more fun. Yeah, I don't know. I guess you can follow your heart on that if that's what feels right for you.
Well, I feel like you're an expert on the subject of Earth shape, and I'm an agnostic. So, like, right. what are your thoughts on the Hollow Earth thing?
I don't see how it can be hollow. You know, we've dug in a lot of places quite deep. I mean, I think the deepest hole they've ever dug is like 8 miles deep or something like that. But it's kind of just getting like harder and denser, not hollower. But I don't see how it can be compatible. Like, I don't see how a flat plane could really be hollow. And, you know, Earth being, you know, basically dirt, terra firma, it doesn't add up to me that it's hollow.
Go ahead.
Part of the reason why it's compelling to me is combine this with another thing, the abiotic oil theory from Russia. The like hollow but somewhat conventional model of the Earth, and then you'd be visualizing the Earth as an organism with geologically reproducing, like blood flow sort of thing, like a Gaia theory type thing with the abiotic oil regenerating. Cause that's what they found in Russia, which I think might be part of why Russia's in such a good position geopolitically, which is interesting. But yeah, the abiotic oil theory thing is really cool. And the idea of a hollow Earth is just fun to me. And the Agartha stuff, there's fun collages on like TikTok reel type stuff. And so that's all compelling. And the story about the guy who just happened to fly into Agartha and then like crashed and then met all these weird people and like people who live inside, and like all this stuff is just cool. And so this idea of the abiotic oil being the blood of the Earth organism, and then inside are these ancient like human related species, just sounds like a cool model. I'm wondering if you in the researching of the Earth shape, if you had delved into these other models and what interesting things there are and compare and contrast. Cause this is the type of thing that I look for in these Earth shape discussions.
Yeah. I mean, it definitely sounds like, I mean, it's interesting, and I haven't delved in a ton. I've like, you know, read a bit about it, but as far as beyond it kind of just being like maybe interesting, I don't know, maybe there are other worlds out there, maybe it doesn't have to be a hollow Earth, maybe those kinds, like like Atlantis, like these lost lands that exist with passageways that we don't really have access to, and that's maybe how it was explained and to someone, or it made sense to them in the way that they got there or got back. And who knows? I have no idea. I don't think it's hollow per se. I don't think it's compatible with what I believe, but I do think it is interesting. And aside from it kind of just being something that's fascinating, I can't like pick it apart like I can Ball Earth, you know, like, oh, well, they say with a hollow Earth, it's got to be this. I mean, aside from it being possibly a ball, which makes no sense, that's incompatible with what I believe.
I guess what I would.
Bill.
Well, I wasn't saying nothing.
No, I mean, what are your thoughts?
A hollow Earth just makes me think of Land of the Lost. So there's that. True. The original one that I grew up on way before you guys were born.
Hey, no. Or it's around the world, and is it no Journey to the Center of the Earth, right? They
Journey to the
Center. Is it? Another yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Although Jules Verne, right? Apparently, he's a conspiracy or an elitist or something like that. I've heard someone on one of the podcasts, and I was like, "Wait, Jules Verne? I read him when I was younger, and I thought, he's planting stories in our minds." But they journey to the center of the earth, and they
around the world in 80 days, and 20,000 leagues under the sea.
I believe War of the Worlds too was him too, right?
Right.
No, that's H.G. Wells. My bad. I was going to say, though, from an interesting standpoint, Luca, not that I believe that there's aliens or other life forms out there, but I would think that the normie of, like, there's an infinite world out there of, like, places that maybe one day you could space travel to is also cool. But again, not that I really believe that aspect of round or global Earth, hobo mom, but just, you know, just throwing it out there, you needed some enticement. Just think of like Star Trek or Star Wars, right? Like that, not possible, I don't think, with a flat Earth worldview.
It isn't?
Except I don't know, actually. That's a good point, is it? I don't know. Hold on, correct me. Can we have Star Trek in your world?
Well, it seems so untenable in our normie physics world. Like, they pretend like it is, but it really doesn't seem very plausible within the mainstream paradigm of how the cosmos works. I feel like these alternate interpretations might have more loose interpretation for like what might be possible.
Space travel is only possible if there's no space. Is that what you're
inside every hollow Earth or every hollow planet, there's a portal that you can transmit yourself to. That'd be fun. I think that's how one of the Mario games works that way.
Is that Galaxy?
You're right.
maybe that was a revelation of the method.
Yeah, Mario. Oh, that's excellent.
Oh boy.
I just read this book called Forever War. It was written in 1972-ish, I think, by a guy who was in Vietnam, but it's in the future, and they use this their space travel is they rely on these, I think they call them gateways, but what it does, it just accelerates you to like 0.99% of light speed. So, and why it's called Forever War is this guy enlists right when they're attacked by somebody that they really weren't attacked by. So it was a thing on the Vietnam War. But at any rate, when they do all this traveling, when he comes back to Earth, his mom and dad that he left when he was 18, she's like 90 now. And he is only in the service for like a total of, I think they call it relative time. It's like 5 or 6 years, but 2,000 years go by or something like that. And the whole time that this war is over. So every time he goes out to another place, he comes back and the whole world's changed. It was an interesting book. It was kind of really cool. It's like, yeah, I don't fit in anywhere anymore. But the time travel thing is what made me think of that.
Ender's Game is like that, right?
I forget about Ender's Game. Yeah.
Yeah. They discover time travel. And then like, what is it? The Readers of the Dead, like there's a bunch of sequels, and that's what time travel, they like lose hundreds of years every time they do travel.
And they discover interstellar travel, and a side effect of that is acceleration of the passage of time.
Yeah.
Like there's some kind of thing that connects everything, and they can tap into that. I forget. It's been a while since I read it, but I've realized that was not descriptive. And for those of you who aren't watching our lovely video stream, it's I made it
with a very Italian list.
He did not this Italian. With his hands.
I did this, guys. For those of you listening, this is what I did. It's funny because I never watched YouTube videos or anything like that. I just listen to podcasts, so they'll always be like, "Oh, for those of you listening, I was like, that would be me." I don't know. Maybe I'm in the minority on that.
So. No, I only listen. Also, I never watch. I've watched a couple of Mark shows just so he could get another like and view on it, but I basically, I'm already listening to this, so I just let it play in the background.
That's true. I did jump in on a couple of his live streams. It like happened during, I think I was going to pick up my son. I was like, I'm just driving. I'll do a live, one of his live shows. And actually I was chatting. I was like, oh, I got a shout out. I was like, this is kind of cool.
Well, I will add that of all of the Mark Claire shows to watch, this one's really important. It's got some extremely important visuals.
Yes, you need to watch this.
Makes show. Way more sense if you watch it.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. I think like every commentary has been like us commenting on, oh, have you seen this? Well, let me steal the share screen here and show you some Indiana pictures. So, yeah, apologies for all the people listening who couldn't see any of that.
I think the people that are going to be listening to this are going to know exactly what you're talking about when you said the Indiana.
Like, just envision a GeoCities website, and that's what the Indian NASA is.
Oh my god! It didn't even cross my mind that we spent like 3 minutes looking at pictures of the moon.
Yeah, I know. I did until just now.
Alleged moon. Come on, people. Oh, yeah,
let me show you this, guys. For all the listeners out there, I'm pulling a globe up to the camera and showing you how it says USSR. So, yeah. Whoops, sorry, Mark.
Rewind to aliens for a moment. I've been thinking about this. I'm a huge aliens hater. I think aliens are fake. But my brother, or my half-brother, he was talking about aliens now because they're rolling it out as something acceptable to think. And so I was talking to him, and I've been trying to like delve into that like outer layer of conspiracy world that I'm not really tuned into to see what they're talking about. And so I found these interviews with the Blink 182 singer, Tom DeLonge. I don't really know the band. I don't know if I've ever listened to a song, but I remember like, it's the band that the emo girl in high school liked.
Oh my gosh, wait, how young are you, Luca?
I'm old and I don't blink 182. Come on. All the small things, come on.
Yeah, I was like, I didn't like them, but I knew them. Like,
no, damn it. What decade are they from?
Oh my gosh, the 90s, right?
90s?
I think, late 90s. Yeah, that was on the bus. 90s, early. We used to listen to a lot of radio.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I grew up with all the old rock, but I didn't get a lot of that middle era after grunge had kind of tapered off. Until,
oh yeah, that's when they were
other, yeah. High when the indie rock came into the picture. So yeah. Anyway, the lead singer.
Why are we talking about him?
Lead singer, an aliens guy, and he started a podcast he wrote a book, and he's been super into it his whole life. And apparently, a bunch of like CIA guys have contacted him. And then they basically were like, hey, you want to be our spokesperson? And so then they did some like disclosure through him or something. So I've just been trying to figure out what's going on. It seems like the center of the alien psyop to me. But it's also really interesting to me that across all these conversations I'm finding about aliens, they're all strictly scientific materialist assumptions about things. And I was thinking about how aliens and Nephilim, and if you're a Gnostic New Age type, then Archons all sort of serve to explain certain holes in the accepted narrative reality. And since the internet's just creating so much access to information, we're all learning about things about history that don't make sense unless you add some pieces. And so people with different worldviews are choosing different things to be a stand-in for that function. And I feel like aliens is the atheist one for a whole set of things that we talk about as Nephilim or spiritual entities and stuff.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I could see that. Yeah.
It makes sense.
So you're saying that aliens are what the atheists go for and like the religious people go for Nephilim? Is that, are you saying they're equivalent, I guess, is what I'm asking?
It's literally the biblical narrative. So yeah,
it's like an explanation. Okay. Well, if you got evolution, like, well, obviously there's all these, right, as we clearly established, there's infinite worlds out there. So clearly there's aliens, and clearly they have, they're advanced, and so they can do crazy stuff. And so anything that's hard to explain, which I would pull up the meme, but I won't do it for the listeners, obviously. But they're like,
oh, you should. Aliens, you can totally, right? Pull them, yeah, up for the listeners.
Yeah. So, and you said something else too that was about aliens, but it is. Well, I think your whole point of aliens used to be the sci-fi, like clearly sci-fi, right? And it was like weird if you really believed in it. And now, I had an awkward moment at work. Were somewhat during the eclipse. So I was in Cleveland for the eclipse, actually. So I got to see the total eclipse. I'm not sure actually how you explain that, hobo mom. Well, explain. So what are eclipses, I guess?
Oh, that's
easy.
Oh, what an eclipse.
That's easy.
All right, Bill, what is it then?
Well, it's the same thing. The moon, just the flat moon goes between the flat earth and the flat sun, and you still get the eclipse.
Are they like flat, like that they're like
they're different planes.
Just like that.
That's how the world ends.
Oh, and for the people that aren't watching, I just went like that.
There was a lot of gesticulation in the past 30 seconds. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's excellent. Yeah. Okay. Well, eclipses, if you want to take a quick side track, I don't know if anybody else wanted to add to what was said before, but eclipses are actually really easy to explain because the celestial bodies are all above the Earth. But the one thing that is important to remember is sometimes there have actually been eclipses that have existed where the sun and the moon are actually both visible in the sky at the same time. So lunar eclipses where the sun and the moon are in the sky at the same time. But when that happens, you're supposed to have the sun, the Earth, and then the moon. So the Earth's shadow is eclipsing the moon. You have a lunar eclipse. But that doesn't actually make sense. They're in the sky, and the way that they rotate, there have been a ton of depictions historically of basically another celestial body. It's like a dark sun. And the eclipses have been, people have known when they were going to occur well prior to there ever being the idea that the Earth could have been spherical. So this whole like, well, we predict them now. They were predicting them long, long, long ago. And the way that the basically the cycle of the moon and the sun over the sky is predictable enough. But there's what is it? Rahu, the black sun. Sorry, it's after midnight here, so my brain is shot. But,
oh yeah, we got.
Rahu, the black sun, is a third celestial body, and that eclipses the sun and the moon periodically in the sky. So it's not even it's not a shadows situation. You're talking about something else blocking it.
Not to keep going back to flat earth, but maybe my last question is, do we know that, I'll say, ancients did not view the Earth as a globe or as a sphere?
How do you mean?
Well, you just said like we now can predict things and we say it because we know, but they've been able to predict celestial movement 10,000 years ago or whatever, right? But did they think the Earth was flat back then, or did they also think the Earth was round? Round being a ball. So
it was a really, I think, radical idea that the Earth was a globe. Like, that was a very radical concept. That is not something that was
like the Mayans didn't think the Earth was a ball.
Right.
I don't think.
Right.
Bill seems for those of you listening, Bill has a dubious expression on his face.
Yeah. I don't know. Did the Mayans think the world was spherical? I don't know that.
I don't know if I can say specifically the Mayans, but depictions of the Earth and maps of the Earth have existed flat for far longer than there is ever any sort of notion or demarcation that a flat map would have actually been some sort of curved representation.
Right. Until we talk about, you get to Atlas and the Greeks, and that's why I was like, geez, I've never really thought about the Mayans ever thinking that the world was a sphere or flat or whatever. Never thought of that at all. So Mesoamerica, I don't know.
Yeah.
That one actually confused. I'm thinking hard on that one. That's an interesting question.
Yeah. Yeah. I, as far as I know, there's not depictions of like a globular Earth. In like far, far back history. And there have been maps. There's tons of maps, flat maps, that are actually extremely accurate, super accurate, eerily accurate compared to, you know, what you would think.
What about geo, like satellite, like geocentric, what is that called? Orbit when you...
They're stationary, geo... synchronous.
Yeah. Thank you. Geosynchronous orbit.
So they're stationary. So what difference would that make?
Damn.
Wow. If the world's flat or a sphere.
Yeah, but you know, stuck, like this.
If they're even up there, I'm just
saying. Well, I was just going to say, we don't have satellites then.
And I think it says something like NASA is the largest consumer of helium than any entity out there. They purchase and consume more helium than anything else.
They just talk like this.
Yeah, that's why they all talk. So they do launch a lot up into the sky using helium, and there's tons of balloons up there floating, but helium is gonna float.
I'm gonna have to fact check that. Google.com.
Google's not gonna tell you anything. All right. So, I mean, a couple other things. A lot of people say the horizon, when you look and you see a ship disappear over the horizon, oh, it's because it's disappearing over the curve. But if you have a high enough powered lens, you can zoom right in and bring it right back into view. And there are tons of accounts of being able to see very, very, very far in the distance. So if you're on one, you can see islands and land. There's instances of ships being able to see land 150 miles away, even lighthouses. You can see lighthouses very far away. And if the curvature is going, it's something along the lines of 8 inches per mile squared. So for each mile, because it's not a linear line, you know, it's a curved line. So it's 8 inches per mile squared that it's supposed to be going around to be able to make the circumference of 24,000 miles around. And if you can see a lighthouse on the water 50 feet ahead of you, it should be, even if you're up, like if you're up on the top of a ship, on a tall ship, and that lighthouse is, say, 100 feet high, it should still be 200 feet under Earth. You're looking, you can't look through the Earth, but people see lighthouses, and ships have been navigating with lighthouses for a very long time, and being able to actually document, there's documented visuals of being able to see the light from way further away than they should be able to see it.
Pulling up a flat Earth map, and I'm just like, well, in theory, then you'd be able to look all the way across an ocean to land that's
there is on still the perspective. Other side. So there's still perspective. There's a visual perspective. So, you know, when you're on a really, really, really flat road, a level road, a perfectly level road, and there are lights lining that road, they're all, let's say, whatever, 15 feet high. As you look down that road, they're getting shorter and shorter and shorter because there is still a visual perspective, but that visual perspective, that horizon line of your visual perspective, everything's going to converge to that. So everything at the top converges down with the way your eyes work, converges down, everything from bottom converges up and the sides converge in. And that's why it looks like lights are getting shorter and shorter and shorter as you look down a street.
Didn't the Greeks invent perspective though? Some would. I don't know now. Well, I trust this. I was trying to be funny, Bill. Sorry.
I don't have any perspective. I don't know.
A lot of perspective on this recording.
Hobo Mom just, the vanishing point. As you look down a road and I've done it. You look and it just disappears. And I was up, the road was down. So it doesn't matter if the world's round or not at that point, because I'm looking down on the road disappearing and then rising back up. So Arizona, I was in Arizona, just so anyone cares. The Navajo reservation.
Won't ask why, but
I just wanted to go see a rock, but I'm kind of weird.
For those of you listening, we're shaking our head. No, Bill. No. Well, it is 12:30. I don't know. 9:30 our time, though. Yeah. Well, actually, Luca, where are you?
It is also 12:30 for me.
Oh, I like the cryptic response.
Two Easties and two Westies.
I'm in New York. I wasn't trying. Oh.
Sorry to tell you.
When I said atheist, I should have said scientific materialist, like the people who trust the science as their religion.
There is so many holes in that. Can we do a quick evolution tangent? Sure. I realize we might be
about the respectful parenting thing.
Screw this. Mom, bring us home with your. We'll do plugs. I don't really have anything to plug. Turn it over to Hobo Mom.
Okay. I don't actually really want to plug anything that I do. I mean, if you find it, great, but it is not something I'm going to be talking about Flat Earth on. I understand how people view that. I don't need less listeners. So, yeah, I believe in respectful parenting. I believe it is wrong to coerce children and try and manipulate them to get you to do what you want them to do. And I'm really passionate about it.
Is that, as someone who I have a 5 and 2-year-old, that resonates with me, that idea of like not trying to trick them or lie to them. I think of like, I've read certain Rye books or, I guess kind of Montessori, but like kind of, is that, play into that kind of concept, and maybe absolutely. You could explain that to the listeners who don't read parenting books.
Yeah, absolutely. So Rye, yeah, resources for infant educators would be Rye. That's Magda Gerber. She had this idea basically to treat infants like humans from birth and don't coerce them. And that includes not just like not hitting your child, which seems like a no-brainer to me, but it still exists. People still hit their children and spank them. But that only makes kids more likely to hit themselves. So kids are going to be more aggressive if you're aggressive towards them. But I also am completely against rewards. So I actually am against trying to give kids M&Ms to get in their car seat or whatever it is, because you're manipulating them. You're trying to manipulate their behavior, and eventually kids see through it. And so you have to kind of keep upping the ante, and it doesn't work. And that's not how relationships work in real life. You don't try and bribe your partner. And if you do try to bribe your partner, then you should probably take a closer look at how you're have your relationships with people. So I try to be really consistent with my values, and that extends from, you know, everyone that I'm, all my friends, to my partner, to my children. And it doesn't make it different. They're still humans, and yes, they're dysregulated and they have really challenging moments, but it doesn't mean that it's okay for us to coerce them to behave the way we want them to behave.
I could have used you like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I've always loved this. You mentioned something about, it's crazy how libertarians talk about non-aggression all the time and then don't extend it to this. It has been like a little hovering subculture attached to it, though. And I've loved that that's always been there. I've always loved all the way that this sounds, but there is something that a lot of mothers that I've talked to who are in like homeschooling adjacent communities talk about the just the permissive hippie style of parenting and the problems with that. And that one of the things I found when I was looking this up is it differentiates from that. Do you want to talk about how you differentiate respectful parenting from hippie permissiveness?
Yeah, absolutely. Permissiveness is just as bad. If you parent in a permissive way, kids do not, especially young children, they cannot do well in an environment where they have too much freedom because they don't understand the risks of life. So what it is being able to give like really good guidelines, being a confident leader for children. So you don't just let them run out in the street and you're not trying to negotiate them. Like, you know, you're not going to try and negotiate with them not to run out into the street. You're going to be like, oh, but don't do that. It's not good for you. It's really unhealthy. Or like permissive parents will try and talk their children into things. And it doesn't work that way. So it's very different. What it is a not authoritarian style of parenting, which is, it's my rules, my house. And that's where it begins and ends. And it's not permissive where it's like, let's just, I'm going to take into account everything that you want and do whatever you want. It is an authoritative style of parenting where children can have influence and they can absolutely, there are certain things you try and give them as much freedom as possible, as much autonomy as possible. While simultaneously also knowing this certain decisions are not up to them. And then it is absolutely the adult's responsibility to make sure that that happens. So any rule that you do make in the house has to be one that you can enforce. So you can't have rules against things like language. You can't control what another person says. So if you're like, we don't use that word in this house. Well, that doesn't make sense because the children just used that word in the house. So you can't stop them from speaking. And if they're using those words, realistically, if you don't use them, they'll stop using them. And they might've picked it up from a friend, but they're going to stop using it because of just what happens inside the home. So it has to be a rule that you can enforce. Like, I'm not going to let you go into the cabinet and get whatever you want out of the cabinet. That's a fine rule. But if your kid's going into the cabinet and you're going, oh, remember, we're not supposed to go into the cabinet. You know, if they're still going into the cabinet because they're a 4-year-old and they have no impulse control, it's the adult's responsibility to walk up and physically stop them. I'm not going to let you go into that cabinet. You physically stop them from going into the cabinet. So it's a lot of people get confused and a lot of people will say, oh yeah, I'm a respectful parent or peaceful parent. And the way that they parent ends up being permissive, but it's giving kids too much control in things that realistically actually can make them feel unsafe. It is natural for kids to try to push boundaries and if you have really like elastic boundaries, they never really know what the rules are. So they're going to continue to try and push through. Where if you have very rigid, specific, clear rules and boundaries, kids actually feel it's like guide rails on a bridge. You know, if you're going across a bridge or walking across a bridge and there's no guide rails, you're like, oh, okay, that's a little scary. But if there's like a very clear guide rails, you're like, okay, I'm confident I can get through. So kids need those guide rails. And that's our job as parents. And then we give them as much autonomy in every situation that we can, in the circumstances that we can. Free play would be a good one, especially for young children. Like we shouldn't be controlling the way that they play.
There's a study that at a daycare or something like that, where there was no fence and it was like all the children kind of played right kind of close to the door. And then they put in a fence to outline the yard. And then the children started playing out farther from, you know, where the caregiver was. And the idea was a boundary because kids need that because otherwise they get, like you said, they're young. They still need some guidance, but you give them a safe place to freely play in. So like that study I read, there's a book called Easy to Love, Difficult to Discipline. I think it talked about that. And in that book, like the very first paragraph, my cousin is a family therapist. He recommended the book. And the book is like a trick. It's like, you think you're going to read about how to deal with kids. It's like, actually, you just need to if you want your kid to act a certain way, you need to change yourself. Like you mentioned that, Bobo Mom. And it's like, if you need to model the behavior you want, it's like, okay, so I guess I got to change. Fine.
I remember from back when I was a little team kid youngling, like on the side of the not, like if I was a kid seeing another kid misbehaving, I would let it slide, like team kid. Like it's wild to me, or it was at that point wild to me, that the adults just think that the kids don't see through it when the rules don't make sense, or when they're total hypocrites about the rules. And it has always been mind-boggling to me that adults think that that is going to work, that the kids will follow them. And it always seemed to me like, what did they just like grow up and that adults are like
at
some point? And I feel like those of us who look at it this way are just the ones who didn't forget growing up bullshit rules and bullshit makes you not want to follow them. Like, it seems so simple and common sense to me.
I've totally been caught in that myself. I can't believe I just said that.
Parenting is hard, for sure. I will put it out there. But that's great. People like you, Hobo Bob, it's good to remind us about that and teach us on those types of topics. Because my son is he pressure tests all boundaries and stuff constantly. It's like, you have to be consistent. It's like, nope, we don't do this. Because once you're like, well, today we'll do it, then it's like tomorrow. It's like, well, what about? It's like, oh my gosh, like, no. It's like anyway. So.
I also experience like toward the permissive end, not really permissive, but like more toward that direction. And like this idea of authoritative, consistent rules just sounds so appealing to me, even as like someone with such an anarchist personality.
it is. And I mean, again, it's a tricky thing. It's a really tricky thing because I still give my kids so much freedom. Like a lot of people might even see me out like at parks or playgrounds and think that I'm a super permissive parent because I don't have rules, that it's not their rules. So, you know, my kid might be like running up a slide and I'm going to let him run up the slide. I'm not going to stop him because there is no said rule about going up or down slides. If they're like getting in somebody's way or knocking someone over, I'll stop them. You don't hurt somebody's physical body, but
it's a nap violation.
Yeah. Nap violation.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's just,
you're out of the party.
Totally. Yeah. And so it goes kind of like this full circle. Absolutely. Where, yeah. But permissive is tricky. And if you're too strict, then kids are just want to break out of that as fast as possible. And you just got to understand as a parent what you really do have control over. There's a lot we just don't.
That's very true.
Yeah. Empathy is a huge piece too, because I think that's maybe something I didn't mention. It's a huge piece too, because even if your kid is upset about something that you think is absurd or ridiculous or in your mind wrong, it's real to them. And so I think empathy is really a huge piece of it. So, you know, my kid might be really upset that we have to go home because he keeps doing dangerous things. And instead of being like, well, you deserve it, you deserve to go home. You've been bad today. I approach it from a point of empathy. I'm like, my kid doesn't actually understand all of the world yet. It's like, you really wanted to keep playing. You really wanted to keep pushing people. It's not safe. I'm not going to let you be unsafe with your body. So, but I hear you. I hear you really want that. Yeah, that really sucks. We have to go. And being able to connect on that level with another human, that's what builds trust. And that's what you're really going for, because you'd want a kid not to feel too much shame, because they'll get older. They'll grow out of all of that. But when they're adults or when they're teenagers, you want them to be able to go to you with their problems. When the problems are really big, they don't want shame and judgment when they have friends that are doing things that they think that you might get mad at them for. So you really like that empathy piece of being like, I accept you fully and wholly for who you are as an individual. And I'm just here to like guide you. And I can like just be a listening ear, even though I'm the one that created a rule that's really upsetting you. I can also understand that you're really upset and that's okay to be upset.
It's great to hear, and it's a good constant reminder to someone, like I said, who has young children. I'm like,
yeah.
Yeah, my kids are all older. You're just talking about all the mistakes I made. Thanks. Great. Perfect.
Every parent needs them. Mom, those, who cares? You're not alone. That's okay. I yell at my kids sometimes. I do things I'm not proud of. We all do. We
get to learn from it, though. Yeah, it is. I think, and that's another thing too. The lesson is like forgiving yourself, because that's another thing you model too. It's like, hey, I messed up. Like I shouted or whatever. You know, I overreacted. And yeah. It's always funny when like, Dad, you overreacted. I'm like, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
My arrogance.
But you didn't die, so I kept you.
Yeah, exactly. Just
remember that. Yeah.
Still. Well, did I don't want to, I might jump off here. I don't want to end it too early, but.
I should too.
Oh, we've been, I've got a recorder going. We're like 123 right now, almost an hour and a half. So
smoke filled room, you know.
Yeah, we got a little bit of pre on there, but so we're easily over an hour. All
right. I'm sure once you cut out some of the blank space and like, no, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, once you do all the edits, you know.
Just, take out all the stuff that doesn't everything make sense.
Chad said it'll be really short.
My words and the visuals, it'll just be the wise words of Hobo Mom and Lucas. Yeah, great exactly. Questions.
We're gonna cut this down to about 15 minutes. It's just gonna be the world according to Hobo Mom. And spoiler, it's flat.
And cut in clips explaining all the gestures every time we go like. Yeah,
well, we can do a follow-up too. I've got more.
Yeah, this was fun, guys.
Evolution tangent that you asked for too.
Yeah.
Well, we don't. It's a tangent that we don't need to. Yeah, that'll be the next time we do it. So.
Yeah, I've got some tangents, but you know, they're tangent, which you know just proves the world is not flat. I'm everywhere. You can't lock me down on anything.
That's good. All right. Well, for everyone who's watching, don't forget to buy your Fox and Sons coffee. Those of you listening, buy it. But I'm going to sign off, gentlemen and lady.
All right. It was a lot of fun, guys. It was really, really a lot of fun.
Thanks
for doing it. It was so great.
Thanks for the Zoom. All right. Take care, everyone.
Bye, guys.